All right, guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. And today we are taking a look at this week in WWE, including the big reveal of Mustafa Ali being the leader of Retribution, The Fiend taking out Kevin Owens, and of course, the WWE Draft Part 1. We're going to get it all started right after this. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out. It's right at the top and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
All right, everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast. Guess what? It's Sunday. That means it's time for your week in review for WWE. And we've got a lot going on because Hell in a Cell is right around the corner. We've got the Draft Part 2 coming up this Monday night. We've got some news about Charlotte's return and Matt Riddle and WWE being sued for $10 million each by Candy Cartwright. But first, I'd like to welcome you to the show. This is the WWE Podcast. That is the unofficial version because we are not affiliated with WWE. Got to make sure I let you all know that. And if you'd like to reach out to the show, it's realwwepodcast@gmail.com or send us a voicemail, 518-952-0247. And many of you did last week. I mean, you guys were flooding me with voicemails. And we've got one today, just one, but I'll be getting to that in a minute. But first, if you haven't checked out The Botch Guy on YouTube, go do it. And many of you have, and I appreciate that, and I've gotten great feedback. And you've told me that you're glad that you subscribe because he is a super entertaining, very easy to watch and listen to YouTube channel on wrestling. Very quick, too. Very quick to draw, meaning anytime something happens in WWE, even yes, botch-wise, but maybe a big angle, big event, this guy is on it. He is one of the fastest-growing YouTube channels in wrestling on YouTube right now. So check out The Botch Guy on YouTube. And I also did a total episode with him, a full hour plus with him reviewing the draft for Night 1 just a few days ago. So check that out on my feed, and I'm sure you'll be glad you did. We'll be collaborating very soon in the near future, probably post Hell in a Cell. So just a couple of weeks, and the Botch Guy and I will be back in action here, right here on the WWE Podcast. So it'll be a lot of fun. He brings a lot of energy to the show. If you listen to him, he is very energetic. It's kind of the opposite of my voice at times, and I don't mean that in a bad way at all. I think it's a great kind of diverse voice to bring on the show. I mean that in a very positive way. Not that I'm trying to, you know, be Mr. Rogers and put you to sleep. That's not my objective, although some of you do tell me that you fall asleep during the show. So, hey, whatever, you're listening. So maybe subconsciously your subconscious brain is enjoying the show. But, hey, whatever you need this show for, we're here for you, whether it's entertainment, to hate us, to love us, or fall asleep to. And, we'll, you know, whatever it may be, whether we Bob Ross you or we entertain you, that is what we're here for. I'm glad that you're listening either way. Also, I want to comment quickly before I get to the voicemail on Anthony DeMarco, who did Rivalries this past week on SmackDown versus Raw in 2005. Again, really, really great co-host on the show, and has obviously his own host. He's his own host. He's not even really a co-host anymore. I'd consider him more of like a partner in crime with this whole thing. And he has a Rivalries podcast that he does on this feed. And he does a really great job covering some of the biggest rivalries in WWE history. And this past week was not just a particular individual versus another individual. It was a brand versus a brand in 2005. And, you know, first of all, I would like to say I think he did a great job. And he covered some of the moments, the big moments that happened at that time very well, including the John Cena moment when he was the face of SmackDown at that time. And when he came to Raw, I remember how big of a moment that was. I remember watching it in real time. It doesn't feel like it was 15 years ago, but it was the moment of, on the highlight reel, Chris Jericho was introducing the newest member to Monday Night Raw from the draft, and it was John Cena. When his music hit, that was probably the biggest pop John Cena's got, at least in his top five in his career. No boos. I mean, it was across the board cheers for John Cena. I just remember that moment. I didn't see the clip, but I remember it was an orange jersey, if I believe, he came out in. And he was one of the fastest rising stars in the company. And I remember seeing him just a year earlier facing the Big Show at WrestleMania 20 in Madison Square Garden for the United States Championship. And he won it that night. I mean, that's the first big memory I have of an in-person John Cena memory in my brain. And you know, again, that moment with Chris Jericho and Chris Jericho's face, I mean, he was just so, he seemed genuinely surprised, and it was just a really big moment from a reaction standpoint. Jim Ross, I remember, added a whole lot to that moment, talking about how, you know, listen to these fans. It was a really, really cool moment for John Cena, for the brand, for the company, really cementing John Cena as that next guy even further. Also, what Anthony pointed out in his review was that the draft lasted weeks. It wasn't just a one-night deal. So much different than today's format with this one-night, two-night now event, it was weeks long. And I'm wondering what you guys think about that. If WWE were to ever go that road again, would you want a weeks-long draft, or would you want it just all dropped in your lap in one night? Because there are benefits to both. You know, you never know who's going to show up next, but from plausibility, why wouldn't you just do your draft and everyone makes their picks and we move on with our lives? So it was a different time back then. Anthony does a great job breaking it down, and it really was something that was kind of a new concept. Yeah, it was a new, fresh idea that WWE had, and they even made a video game that started the whole SmackDown versus Raw series from THQ. Boy, THQ has some just great memories of video games, don't they? And look, I never really talk about video games on this show, almost ever. But if you are a wrestling fan from, like, even from 98 forward, if you watched at that time, you had an N64, you had a PlayStation 1, you had a PlayStation 2, you remembered the just glory days of THQ Gaming, whether it was WCW NWO Revenge, which I wasn't a WCW fan, but I loved that game. And that game engine that brought us the best wrestling game of all time in many people's eyes, I think a lot of it's nostalgia, but the game engine's really good. And No Mercy, that was, I mean, that's the gold standard, right? They originally started with I think it was WWF WrestleMania 2000. And then they evolved from there to the No Mercy game, which just holds so much, respect in the gaming community, at least wrestling gaming community. So many great memories. But yeah, I mean, then they transitioned into SmackDown. I mean, I know that the original, I think it was just called WWF SmackDown, and then WWF SmackDown Know Your Role. SmackDown, I Just Bring It was number 3. Shut Your Mouth was number 4. I think Number 5 was Here Comes the Pain. from Brock Lesnar. I believe that's how it went. And then after that, after Here Comes the Pain in 2004, it jumped to SmackDown versus Raw in the gaming series. I mean, that actually created an entire gaming series that THQ diverted from. They're just SmackDown only to SmackDown versus Raw. And it actually went from SmackDown versus Raw, which is really 2005. It was in 06, 07, 08, 09, 10, 11, 12, 13. And then that's where they transitioned into the WWE 2K14. And then it went to the beloved 2K20. I see. I can't even say that with a straight face. And now we're into WWE 2K Battlegrounds, which I believe that WWE will be resuming their WWE 2K probably 22 next year. They're skipping 2K21 because I think they want to completely rebuild the series and have 2 years to do it instead of 1 year to do their yearly release. It's like Madden or MLB The Show or whatever other sports series that comes out every single year. 2K20 was a disaster. They want to cleanse themselves of it and move on to 2K22. So 2K21 will not exist. It's like the iPhone 9. It doesn't exist. Speaking of iPhone news, by the way, new iPhones announced on Tuesday, if you care about such things. Okay, well, let's get to that voicemail, and then we're going to get to your week in review. There's so much to discuss this week. It's just a ton. And yeah, it's going to be a little bit of what I've already discussed in my Raw review and, of course, in the SmackDown Draft Part 1 review that I did with the Botch Guy. But it's also looking ahead to the Draft Part 2 and, of course, Charlotte news about when she's returning. So let's listen to that voicemail and get things going.
Hi. This is Tim calling from Arlington, Texas. And I know there's probably no way you're not going to cover this on your show, but I'm going to say it anyways because I was watching the draft and Seth Rollins got drafted to SmackDown and I sighed an instant sigh of relief. Thank goodness. And then Rey Mysterio and his son got drafted to SmackDown too and I sighed, but it was not relief that time. So, oh my goodness, I thought we were done. I thought, finally, and why did they have to do that? So I want to say that. Also, I thought it was kind of crazy when they drafted New Day, but not Big E. That's kind of disappointing, but at the same time, they're drafting tag teams together, and it was established that Big E is a solo act now, right? So, like, there should be no upset in that. I mean, yeah, there can be. I can understand why there would be. But, I mean, he declared himself a solo act. He even got the blessings from his tag partners to go be a solo act. So, I mean, he's free to be traded, right? And then also, tag teams are supposed to go as a tag team. I guess factions do too because, you know, they had an entire faction, the Hurt Business, get drafted. So, it's like, here's four people in one draft, which is kind of crazy, but it is what it is. But Rey Mysterio and his son aren't a tag team just because they've tagged together. So I thought maybe they shouldn't have got drafted together. But if that's the way you want to play it, then how come Garza got drafted all by himself without Andrade? That made no sense. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to make sense of this. Big E's not part. He's solo now, so he's not getting drafted. But then they draft, the women's tag team championships. So they're not Baszler and Nia Jax. They're not technically a tag team, but they're tagged together right now. And yet they went together as a tag team. They're just not making sense to me. And it gets kind of frustrating. I'm like, well, how come they're a tag team, but Garza's not a tag team? And Rey Mysterio and his son, Dominic, are not a tag team, but you drafted them as a tag team. And it was just frustrating. But anyways, just wanted to throw that out there. Be listening to your show really soon when you do the review. You might have done it by now, and I just haven't seen it drop yet. But all right, thanks a lot for listening.
Tim, thanks so much for calling in. I love your rant there. And I understand your frustration. Certainly, I don't think Rey Mysterio and Dominic are a tag team. They're father and son. They're not an official tag team, although what really makes an official tag team? You know, like what... what is it? Do you have to sign up? Do you have to sign a contract? Like, what is it? How do you know that you could just say that, yeah, we're a tag team? Is it just a verbal consent, right? I mean, I don't know. There's no parameters as to exactly what a tag team means. Is it just you had to have had competed with that person in a tag match over the last, what, 30 days, 90 days? I don't know. Maybe ever. There really isn't a set guideline as to what defines an actual, say, certified tag team. So yeah, I'm with you. When I saw that, I'm like, well, they're family, but they're not a tag team per se. I'm with you on that. Andrade being drafted by himself. Look, I understand that too. Here's what I think maybe you missed, Tim. In the WWE draft rules, because I wanted to see what actual rules were written here. And I, you know, some of them, they actually address some things. And this was one of them. The tag teams and stables will count as one pick unless Fox or USA, in conjunction with WWE, wants to specifically pick one wrestler from the group. So I think that answers your concern about why some teams were put together, why some teams weren't, and one was selected out of the two. So that was actually in WWE's draft rules posted on their website. So I think that might alleviate some of your concerns and frustrations. What I don't understand about the draft, though, is champions. How are champions not exempt from this? Because now WWE addressed this not in written form, but in a Michael Cole form, that if you're a champion on one brand, you carry that championship onto the other brand. Really? So let me get this straight. If I'm a SmackDown tag team champion, right? And I go to Raw, well, then I have a SmackDown championship on Raw. How can you defend a SmackDown championship on a show that it's not for? Do they not think this through? It's seriously like five-year-old logic. They don't think beyond step one. They think one step ahead. Instead of realizing that, well, wait a minute, how can you bring a championship that's not that, if a championship is brand specific, how do you bring that championship onto the opposing brand and defend it? Or do you just keep it forever? I mean, that's not addressed. Does WWE think that if you're a champion and the fact that Michael Cole said, you know, you just bring it onto the brand? Well, wait. How does that work? I understand it works for non-brand specific titles. Yes, United States title, Intercontinental title, all the rest. The big ones, WWE, Universal, makes sense. 24/7 is a joke, so that doesn't count. But I don't understand. They didn't address the brand specific championships, which is also the women, right? Like, if you are the Raw Women's Champion and you're drafted to SmackDown and you bring that Raw Women's Championship over there, what happens? Nobody ever talks about this. They just think it's solved by saying you bring your championship with you. Well, no, there's a lot of other problems with that. You can't just make a decision and then expect consequences or to think through that decision. Oh, boy. Okay. Rand is coming. I will stop. But thanks so much, Tim, for your question. Feel free to call back anytime. Enjoy hearing from you. So let's get to some news here, and I'll make it quick. Charlotte posted a picture of herself on Instagram talking about how she took 8 weeks off of being in the gym. She's nursing an injury. I think it was a knee injury, if I'm not mistaken. She took some time off, recharged herself, getting back into the gym. She said that she's back, getting back into the groove of things from her picture. She's looking really good. I don't mean that in a kind of creepy way. I mean that in like an athletic, from a professional standpoint. So it looks like she's on the mend. And it doesn't also seem that WWE is in a rush to bring her back. It doesn't. That those are the reports, too, that WWE is not interested in just rushing her back. So that's a good thing. I'm in agreement. There's lots of speculation she could reappear at the Royal Rumble, the Women's Royal Rumble in 2021. So I think that would also be a nice landing spot for Charlotte to make her return there. And so that's really Charlotte. I mean, she seems like she's been out of action for months and months now. And it's a good thing because I remember saying before she left that I think I've seen enough of Charlotte. It just seemed like she was getting championship opportunity after championship opportunity, and it was getting exhausting seeing her on the screen every time you turn around. NXT, SmackDown, Raw, she's just there. So I'm glad she took time off. I'm sure that she's enjoying her time off. You know, as they always say, recharging your batteries, and that's exactly what she's done. And I hope that she comes back and is ready to kick some ass. So in other news, though, Candy Cartwright, you remember the whole lawsuit against Matt Riddle? Or, excuse me, the lawsuit that Matt Riddle actually put on Candy Cartwright for the false allegations that he claims she's making about her saying he sexually assaulted her, and he's saying, no, I didn't. And, well, Candy Cartwright is now countersuing WWE for $10 million and Matt Riddle for $10 million, alleging that back in April of 2017, that after an Evolve show in a parking lot, he sexually assaulted her and forced her to do things. I mean, the thing is, we will never ever know the truth. There's no smoking gun here. Otherwise, it would have been brought to the front, and in the limelight immediately. And Matt Riddle probably would have been released by WWE. So if they thought there was a smoking gun, or he thought there was a smoking gun out there, I think that he would be gone. So it's certainly not good news for Matt Riddle or WWE. Everyone's name is going to be dragged through the mud. She's obviously claiming that for punitive damages and for character defamement and all these things that are just bogus things. But again, I mean, I don't know the truth. You don't know the truth. But the old adage is innocent until proven guilty. And I believe in that. So look, if it comes out that he's a scumbag and it's true, fire him. Period. Get rid of him. But it's not going to be fun for WWE to have to deal with these allegations. But it'll be interesting, more interestingly, other than a courtroom, which is not interesting to me, because we love wrestling, not the whole legal side of things when things get messy. But I'll be very interested to see how WWE uses Matt Riddle moving forward. Do they kind of subtly make him a non-factor? Do they kind of stay the course and make him a formidable opponent, but never really capturing championships? Or do they continue to maybe push him? If you're going to take this week as a sample size, he was one of the sacrificial lambs for a returning Lars Sullivan. So that would indicate, again, based on 1 week, that things are not looking good for Matt Riddle. But it's a 1 week sample. Let's see how things go after this. And of course, what we're looking for is a trend. You know, you're looking for a trend of good or bad, not just a up and down, up and down. So anyway, hopefully things all work out well, and that at least from an on-air perspective, and that we continue to see Matt Riddle. And I actually think, honestly, I think Matt Riddle's a heel. I don't see how people cheer for Matt Riddle. I don't get it. I don't understand. He is the frat boy that never left college. He just is a great athlete, legit badass. Yes, no question. But he's like the guy that lives in California, surfs by day, smokes marijuana by night, kind of just chills there, goes to the gym. You know, he lifts big things and puts them down. Like, that's what he seems like. And I'm sure, look, he's an intelligent guy. It's just his on-air character is not easily likable from my perspective. You maybe disagree. Oh, he's a cool guy. Look at his moves. Look, oh, he's a... I don't just go by... Moveset is like the last thing I look at. I don't know why so many people are so obsessed with movesets and moves and athleticism. It's such a afterthought to me. Characters, deep characters, great stories, that's a number one. And Matt Riddle, from a personality perspective, says bro way too much. It's obnoxious. I'm not a fan of the sandals. Just because he can flip his sandals off, it's not impressive to me. He screams heel. I'm not saying fire him. No. In fact, he's just cast wrong. That's all my point is that he's just miscast. He's being portrayed as a good guy, when in fact, I think he should be on the other end of things. Because I personally despise him. And I'm sure many of you out there are like, what are you talking about? This guy's awesome. He's cool. He's laid back. Yeah, but comes off kind of like a D-bag. I'm just the way he is. Look, I mean, maybe it's just not my cup of tea. It's maybe not my cup of tea, and that's all it is. It's just personal preference. But I'm not a fan at all of his babyface character. In ring, he's great. There's no question about it. He's really good in the ring. But okay, I've made my point. But yeah, Matt Riddle, I guess kind of starting there, gets beat up by Lars Sullivan. And I don't think anyone saw that coming with Lars Sullivan returning. I talked about it with the Botch guy on Friday, right after the show. And WWE certainly likes to say the word freak. I mean, somebody counted. I think somebody said that in 30 seconds they said the word freak like 12 times or something. I believe it. They drive nicknames home, don't they? But Lars Sullivan returns, and I don't think, again, no one saw it coming. I'm a big fan of Lars Sullivan, at least, again, on a small scale, from what I saw in his first round. It didn't seem like he's a great promo, but he's got a great presence, a great facials, and I'll be interested to see how they use him moving forward. I talked to the Botch guy when I talked to him, and I'm referencing the show so that many of you who have listened to the show don't go, you already talked about this, don't repeat yourself, but I want to make sure I drive this point home, is I think what they're going to do with Lars Sullivan is give him the 2018 Braun Strowman treatment, 2017-2018 Braun Strowman treatment. What do I mean by that? I think that WWE should, I'm not saying give it an exact roadmap that Braun Strowman took, but give him the squash matches. You know, I know that he jumped right into a Matt Riddle level, but I think that that's what they'll do, and that's what I think they should do, is have him destroy his competition, that nobody can stand up, nobody can put up a fight against Lars Sullivan. And what'll make that great is, after a year or so of doing that, and maybe challenging him a couple times, but remaining undefeated after a year, hell, 6 months. WWE's not going to do a year. Do 6 months. Do 3 months. Because, I mean, there's no such thing as long-term booking in WWE right now, so hell, do 3 months of an undefeated streak and then have him face The Fiend. Not for a championship. No, maybe him face-to-face with Braun Strowman. I think there's money there in Lars Sullivan. And WWE does too. Otherwise, why would they keep him around? He's an asset. They got to make money for him. Any business that has an asset that's not making money, guess what happens to it? Pfft, gone. So I have faith that WWE has faith that Lars Sullivan is going to be a big player in the next year, but that's how I would book it, is this guy has not been stopped, nobody has beaten him, and then in comes The Fiend, or in comes Braun Strowman, or in comes, hell, Roman Reigns. There's something there. I know Lars Sullivan's a heel, but there's something there. It's hard to talk about because they haven't done a whole lot with him, and he's either been injured, or his well-documented mental health issues, those kinds of things have always hampered him, so hopefully he's got his head on straight, hopefully he's injury-free, and they can just go full bore with whatever plan they may have for Lars Sullivan over the next 3 to 6 months. All right, moving down the line here to some of the big moves that took place during the draft. And Seth Rollins coming to SmackDown, to me, was the biggest move of the entire draft so far. It's a huge move. Huge, huge, huge move. I think it's something that is going to shake up SmackDown. And oh, I just realized I didn't answer Tim's part of this question about his concern or his sigh of relief given to Seth going to SmackDown. I agree. And then seeing Dominic and Rey Mysterio come to SmackDown, and they're specifically talking about Seth's past not being able to outrun his past, all that kind of thing. And I'm going the same thing with you. I'm like, no. I wouldn't have been as concerned if Dominic and Rey weren't specifically still talking about Seth and how they're still going to make him pay and he can't outrun his past. If they were talking about something unrelated and maybe hinting towards a new program and they somehow coexist on the same brand, fine, move on with our lives. I think we'd all want that. And it was just very disheartening to hear Seth and Rey Mysterio, or I'm sorry, Dominic and Rey, I keep saying Seth, talking about Rey, Seth. It's tough. It's tough. And I hope that maybe WWE realizes that let's move our separate ways, folks. It's done. It's over. It was done 2 months ago during the Eye for an Eye match. And now we get to watch Aaliyah and Murphy kind of do their thing, which you know, I'm not a huge, huge fan of, but I love the Murphy turn. Love the Murphy turn. So that's a plus. But Seth Rollins going to SmackDown is the biggest move so far. And I hope he gets away from Dominic and Rey. I think he will. Past Hell in a Cell, it'll be over. But with Seth Rollins there, there's a lot of new matchups. And, you know, I know we don't know part two of the draft because now we don't know who's leaving SmackDown, that you would have said, oh, can't wait for that matchup on SmackDown, but now they're drafted to Raw. So I'm going to wait to speculate on the actual matchups for Seth. But what I will talk about is his alliances he could make. What about his alliance, possibly, with Roman Reigns? That seems to be the most obvious, right? That would be an interesting alliance, given the character change in Seth and the character change in Roman, both heels now. And what about an alliance with Bray Wyatt? Seth's already been down that road. We don't need to go down that road. A year ago was the most devastating match in Bray and Seth Rollins' career in the Hell in a Cell. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go watch Hell in a Cell 2019, the main event. You'll know what I'm talking about. So we don't need to go down that road, but what about an alliance with the two? It's possible. I know many people are counting out that, but and I've brought it up, and people are like, I don't know. Well, it's possible. I'd love to see two massive heels team up at some point. I really would. And I'm thinking most likely or most prominently about Brock Lesnar if he returned to align with Roman Reigns and they just run roughshod over WWE like no one's ever seen. I'd love that. I'd love it. So Seth going there is huge. Roman staying on SmackDown is predictable and the right move. I'm no problem with that. Drew McIntyre staying on Raw. Totally agree. No problem there. Asuka, or I'm sorry, not Asuka. I don't know what I thought about. The Hurt Business are staying on Raw. And that, to me, is the right move. And I talked about this with the Botch guy, too. But that was a message sent by WWE, drafting them in round one. Think about that. Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley and MVP, as if you take those individual pieces, you would be like, they'll never be drafted in round one. They're like round 4 or 5. No. As a team, they were drafted in round one. And I think that's a great message to send. The Hurt Business, they're a team that I think I underestimated at the beginning. Because I'm like, they're just throwing these three guys together. You know, it doesn't seem like they'll probably do a whole lot. It's just something to throw guys that they don't know what to do with together. MVP has made them better. MVP has raised them all higher. An MVP should be exactly that. He is the real MVP here. He really is. MVP has been phenomenal upon his return to WWE. In ring, he's fine. In ring, he's not going to knock your socks off. But in ring, he does what he needs to do. He can go. But I think his real money is in his mouth. His real money is in his mouth. And he has a lot of good days, bright days ahead of him. And whenever his in-ring career ends, which I don't know exactly when that's going to be, he will have a slot easily filled in to that managerial role. No questions asked. So, all right. Well, let's take a quick break and then continue with a little bit more draft talk and Randy Orton getting a huge victory and so much more. Stay with us.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com, where they can buy your house Protect your credit and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
Alrighty, well, let's continue a little bit with the draft. I don't want to make this a complete recap of the draft. Just some big ticket items. Asuka, she's still remains on Raw. I think that's the right pick. We had her business stan Raw. AJ Styles jumps to Raw from SmackDown. That's a big move. And having AJ Styles on Raw it's a big move. What's going to be more important for AJ? An evolution of his character. He's the same guy he's been for months and months and months now. And I don't mean heel and babyface. I just mean everything from his attire to his music to his promo style. Everything is the same. And I think AJ Styles could really benefit from some type of even tweak. Anything. Cut your hair. Just alter your music a little. Change your attire. Maybe go back to babyface. I don't know. But AJ Styles needs something. For that good of a talent, he needs to evolve. And I'm not feeling it right now. And it's easily rectifiable. He's nowhere near, I mean, he's not going to be lost in obscurity, but I know he can do more. And he's just kind of the same guy being thrown out there every single time. All right. We got Naomi going to Raw. I know that's earth shattering for a lot of people. But you know what? To be honest, and I don't mean to make light of it, but Naomi undeniably has been somewhat of a joke over the last year. I mean, Naomi's been practically irrelevant. Outside of doing karaoke challenges, she has not been exactly in the spotlight. So hopefully they do more with her. I think they will. Especially she was in round two. The second round for Naomi, considering what she's been, is a big deal. So I think that's the statement there. Bianca Belair going from Raw to SmackDown. Again, another rising star that I think has the ability to own the women's division in due time. What I mean by due time, a year, 2 years. I think she could really kill it in WWE. I think also she should be a heel. I find her as obnoxious as her husband. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, just in a character perspective. They're both really good in the ring. That's not the problem. Just character-wise, I think they're heels. So, all right, I think, you know, there are some other things, right? Like Ricochet stays on Raw. Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler stay on Raw. Mandy Rose stays on Raw because we're all very, very, we're very nervous about Mandy Rose's position. Same with Angel Garza. He also stays on Raw. Dana Brooke stays on Raw. So, New Day, though, I do want to talk about lastly in terms of the draft. New Day breaks up. Does anybody really care? I mean, we all kind of assumed that Big E was going his own way anyway. And we've seen the New Day just completely just squeeze every last drop out of the proverbial orange that they could possibly do for that group. They have done everything they can do. It was time, and it's time to move on. I would have been extremely discouraged had the New Day got back together and just had Big E slotted right back where he was, because Big E was starting to get onto something, and it was a clear sign from WWE that no, Big E is going to continue his singles run without the New Day. Good job. Thank you. Now, the next key is, can we do something with Big E's character? Get away from the New Day. I think that should be coming because he's no longer a part of the New Day. He can't be. He's not on their show. So can we get rid of the, people at home? Can we please? Please get rid of it. I don't need to hear how many times you've been tag team champions. That's not your thing anymore. I will be extremely annoyed and really disheartened if Big E comes out next week on SmackDown and does the same entrance, which makes no sense now, and same attire, same just flamboyant, over-the-top cartoon attitude and cartoon facials and all the gyrating and everything. I know that some people find that funny. I don't know what the target audience is for that. I would assume that their demo is, you know, 7 to 10-year-old girls that find that's amusing. I never have. There's been a few times at the beginning. It was kind of funny. It was new. But I don't know. I'm not a fan of the New Day character, especially with Kofi Kingston as champion, not taking it seriously, loses the championship to Brock Lesnar, comes out throwing pancakes the next week. It's absurd. Apparently, pancakes trump all in that group. So, all right. But that was the other big move in this week in WWE, or in this week in the draft. On the Raw side of things, I haven't really talked a whole lot about this, but Mustafa Ali being revealed as the leader of Retribution. Well, again, I don't know what to think about this. I don't. I know that Mustafa Ali is being advertised to explain his actions on Raw. He's going to speak as a leader of Retribution, give us an explanation. Hey, what's going on? I hope he doesn't give us an explanation that heels give us when there's no writing for what they can't even explain, meaning they give us the old, you don't deserve to know. You people don't deserve to know. That's not a way to really put forth your best effort or show us that you can tell a good story. When I hear a heel say that you don't deserve to know, or wouldn't you people like to know, well, it's none of your damn business. Anything along those lines tells me the writers and Vince don't know what the F to say, so they're just going to go with, well, it'll get heat. Like, you're not going to tell the people. You're telling them that they're not deserving of your answer. That's going to get a heat. People will get mad. Well, yeah, but it's also an admission that you don't know where you're going or how to explain what just happened. Period. Not all the time, but you hear that a lot of times. Or the heel doesn't explain things for a long time. So be on the lookout for that. Just be on the lookout for that particular line from Mustafa Ali. If they come up with a vague answer, there's nothing specific, just keep an eye out and an ear out. So I'll be interested to hear, though, if this is the best thing that's ever happened to Mustafa Ali, even if it's the worst execution of a group I've ever seen in the history of WWE, it is something for Mustafa Ali, and that's what I'm looking for. That's who I'm looking for in this, to rise up. And it clearly seems like they have a lot of faith in Mustafa Ali to be the leader of this group, be revealed as the leader of this group. So, all right, Randy Orton this past week gets the victory on Drew McIntyre after hitting him with an RKO. I like this. It was in a tag match. Yeah, it was in a six-man tag. I get it. And it was the Street Profits and McIntyre versus Orton, Ziggler, and Rude. But I love the ending sequence of that match. And it really put a statement on the RKO. I loved how Drew McIntyre didn't kick out. The RKO was a money finish. Very few people kick out of the RKO. It was a nice way for Randy to start to build his heat back. And y'all know that I've been a fan of Randy Orton become WWE champion for the last 3 months now, and it has yet to happen. But I think as we go on in time here, we have a much better chance of seeing Randy Orton as champion the further we get into this. And I believe that Randy Orton could be champion at the end of this month. When the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view comes and goes, well, so could the WWE championship for Drew McIntyre. It's going to come and go. And it could go right over the shoulder of Randy Orton. And I really hope it does. Now, I've said this again, but I don't dislike McIntyre's champion. In fact, I think he's been a really good champion. But I would love to see what Orton can do with the belt, the heat he could get back, and building for the anticipation of Edge's return. That's what it's all about. And so we'll have to see. But again, this draft could shake things up on part two Monday night. There's a lot of things that can be moved. A lot of pieces. A big eligibility pool. I'm very curious to see what they do with some big names on Raw. So we'll have to see. But as we all know, WWE doesn't stick to their own draft rules anyway. So that is also something to keep in mind. Whenever something's of convenience, they give no explanation and have someone show up on the opposing brand. Or they come up with a bizarre, wildcard rule, quarterly invitational, things that they don't stick to and hope WWE fans go, oh, so there's times that they can come in. Okay. And they just think about that in the broad term rather than the specifics of, well, what does that mean? How does this work? How many times? Vince thinks that fans don't do that. Well, guess what? We do. We care about detail. When you don't, we do. So, all right. Well, nonetheless, guys, this has been a lot of fun. I know that I didn't touch everything in this week in review because there's simply too many details, but I covered the big ticket items, I think. And I wanted to also give you some news on Charlotte, on Matt Riddle's lawsuit with Candy Cartwright. among other things, a voicemail and everything else. So I hope you've enjoyed this. I will be back on Tuesday night to discuss Monday Night Raw. And then Wednesday Nostalgia. I mean, it's just your typical week, guys. It is your typical week for programming here, right here on the WWE podcast. So, guys, as always, thank you so much. Hit us up on email at realwwpodcast@gmail.com. If you want no ads, if you're tired of ads, head on over to our Patreon feed at patreon.com/WWE podcast, and you can get all of the episodes completely ad-free for $1 a month. The entire library, ad-free. So, guys, thank you so much again. For really just thank you guys for making us what this show is. I mean, we're about to crack 600,000 downloads in total. We are consistently in around the top 30 of wrestling podcasts and Apple podcasts. It's a big deal. I mean, you guys are the reason why this is so successful. And I just want to say thank you again. And, I'll be talking to you soon.
Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out. It's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com, where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.